a challenge. The winds blow fierce. We are battling quite a vicious snowstorm. Unfortunately, our departure was not without incident. We are nearly 10 times over capacity. My superior estimated that 50,000 refugees still remained in the port when we pulled up anchor. The refugees screamed and cried, begging for passage. I tried to comfort them with the wisdom of Don Quixote and called out, "Until death, it is all life!" But that did not seem to bring them peace. I feel quite exceptional to be taking part in Operation Hannibal's evacuation. Although I refuse to think of him, I dare say that man who is called my father would be proud if he should see me now. People speak of the Allies and their famous evacuations. But now Hannibal will soon reign in the history books. Speaking of history books, just think, Laura. Your beloved will soon be receiving a medal. I will be officially recognized in the annals of German history. Oh my. Quite a lot of movement. The swaying. I'm sure this is temporary. They will steady the vessel. Yes, they must. Although I am of steely constitution, the other passengers cannot endure over 40 hours of this. Certainly not. I leaned over and threw up on my shoes.
Amelia. As the hours passed, I felt increasingly nauseated. Joanna said it was too cold and windy to take air on the top deck. Instead, she wrapped cold towels around my feet. It helped. Others were more seasick than I was. The baby slept, unbothered. After bouncing for months on the run, the sway of the sea soothed like a lullaby. I hadn't planned for this. I was certain the birthing would kill both of us, just as it had Mama. Yet somehow, after 5 cruel winters of war, I was still alive. I adjusted the baby in my arms. What was happening? Could I have been wrong about the sign? I had received the sign 6 years ago. It was St. John's night, the longest day of the year. Mama loved St. John's celebration. A night of bonfires, singing, and dancing. The tradition called for girls to make wreaths of flowers and candles. At dark, they would light the candles and send their wreaths floating down the river. Legend said that the boy who retrieved your wreath downstream was the boy you would marry. The year Mama died, the older girls let me make a wreath of flowers and candles with them. I chose all of Mama's favorites: hibiscus, roses, poppies, and dried herbs. After setting the wreaths to water, the girls danced around the bonfire. I decided to follow my pretty wreath. I padded barefoot in the grass along the river, watching the flowers and candles turning slowly in the water. I walked quite far. My wreath suddenly bounced, catching on something beneath the surface. It stopped in the center of the river. One of the candles tipped onto the flowers. The herbs caught on fire. I sat in the grass and watched my wreath burn and sink, quietly sealing my fate. I had expected everything to end. But now, I began to think that maybe the sign had been wrong. I had fought so hard and overcome so much. Something changed when the knight arrived. Maybe he truly saved me, had pulled my burning wreath from the water. After all, in Poland, St. Florian was fighter of fire. For the first time in years, people cared for me, protected me. I looked down at Helinka. I could actually feel her. She was mine. I was hers. Her perfect cheeks and fingers were pink, just like my hat. What the knight said was true. She was part of me, my family, and Poland. I had to consider the possibility. Maybe the storm was finally behind me.
Florian. I waited in the chimney, shivering, still tormented by the departure scene on the dock. The ship swayed as it cut through the stormy swells. My stomach lifted up and then dangled back down. I had to think of what lay ahead. When I left, the Amber Room was packed in crates in a secret underground room in Königsberg Castle. The map to the underground vault, along with the key, was still in my boot heel. Only three people knew of the location. Me, Dr. Lange, Galleiter Koch. I thought of my father's maps and pictured Kiel, tucked within a crease of northern Germany. Kiel was approximately 100 kilometers from Denmark, and only 80 kilometers from where my sister was sent to live with our old great-aunt. If I could get there, I would stash the swan in her barn until the war was over. If. That meant I would have to disembark in Kiel without incident, without suspicion. If the blonde soldier had told Koch that I was on the Gustloff, would someone be waiting for me in Kiel? The boat's motion was too severe to forge new papers. And then I remembered. I dug through my pack and found it. The identity card of the German soldier that the Polish girl had killed in the forest. When we reached Kiel, maybe I could leave the ship as a wounded soldier. But once again, I would need Joanna's help.
Alfred. Every lavatory was occupied or soiled. I stumbled to the infirmary, stepping over bundles of life jackets and coats that passengers had peeled off. The ship was so very hot, so foul-smelling of sickness. The last I overheard, we were carrying more than 10,000 passengers. Sailors were discussing whether the ship should follow a zigzag course to evade lurking submarines and whether the navigation lights would be illuminated. I was too sick to care. The nurse was tending to soldiers when I arrived. "I am here for self-admittance," I announced. My legs began to tremble. "Please show me to a cot immediately." "Oh, Alfred, I'm sorry you're seasick, but this ward is for the wounded." My stomach rolled in protest. "I am, in fact, wounded. My constitution has been destroyed by the enemy. The enemy is the sea." "Is this your first voyage?" asked the nurse. "Indeed. And at this moment I have pledged it shall be my last." "Shake it off, sailor," said an officer from his cot. "Go up top and get some air. Look at the horizon." "That really does help," agreed the nurse. "Please," said a wounded soldier. "Don't baby this guy. He loses his lunch and he's crying. I've lost an arm." I tried to turn in his direction. "Seeing that your safe delivery to Kiel relies upon me, sir, perhaps you should have a bit more compassion for a fellow comrade. I will remember this." I walked out of the infirmary and slumped against a wall in the corridor. Dear Hannelore, it is at crossroads such as these that my mind often questions the very integrity of man. Forgive me if I speak beyond your comprehension, but if we share unity of purpose, stand upon the same team, shouldn't we try our best to assist one another? I fondly remember when we were once on the same team. It was for a game in the street. Do you recall it? You were wearing a short pleated skirt and a green ribbon in your hair. The game was brief because your mother quickly called you away. But for those fleeting moments, Laura, we were joined in common purpose. Purpose and principles are so very important. It confounds me when people don't assist or even welcome those on their own team. But it troubles me more when people welcome those from an opposing team. Have you ever considered these thoughts, Hannelore? Have you ever reflected on this idea with regard to your own mother and father? How your mother's perfection was chipped by her judgment? I once asked your mother why she chose to marry your father. Do you know how she replied? She said the oddest thing. Because I love him.
Joanna, I promise. Was it the way he said it? Was there something that lingered behind it? Or was it just my own pathetic loneliness that made me grab the scissors? Florian appeared as I was walking between the maternity ward and the infirmary. I hadn't been sure he was still on board. Secretly, I was happy to see him. Why was it so hard to stay angry with some people? Please, it will only take a few minutes. He smiled. I promise. I quickly followed him to the stairs. He leapt up, taking them in twos, agile even with his pack. We crept through the small doorway in the stairwell up to the chimney. Are you sure you want me to do this? I said.
It's the best option I have right now.
He leaned his back against the door,
in case someone tries to open it.
Move your foot, I told him. I stepped between his legs. Okay. Now come down a bit. He shimmied his back down the door, sliding his legs alongside mine until our faces were level. How much? I asked.
As much as you can.
I ran my fingers through his hair, trying to stand it up at the roots. That would make it easier to cut. It was thick and soft near the scalp. You have nice hair, I told him. He reached out and gently slid one of my curls between his fingers. He closed his eyes.
Maybe you'd better start.
I grasped a piece of his hair with my left hand and snipped with my right. He opened his eyes and looked at the chunk suspended in my fingers. We both laughed. I cut most of the hair and then trimmed as tight to the scalp as I could. It was difficult near his ears. I moved in close, trying to be as gentle as possible. He put his hands on my waist. Was he keeping a safe distance between us? Don't worry, I'm not going to kiss you. I'm hard at work here, I teased. He didn't reply.
So, he said awkwardly, trying to make conversation. I've been to Lithuania.
He was being honest. I decided I should be too. I know, I told him, the first night in the barn, when I took out the shrapnel. You said some things. His face clouded.
Oh?
You said you had once visited Lithuania. You also said you had to recover to find Annie.
Oh, well, that's not too bad. I already told you that Annie is my sister.
I nodded and clipped closer to his scalp. And you told me I was pretty. You said you were a good dancer and asked if I had a boyfriend.
Well, that's embarrassing, he said.
You were delirious. You didn't know what you were saying, I continued cutting, aware of both the silence and the sensation of his hands around my waist. He finally spoke.
The night that I said those things, did you tell me anything?
I stopped clipping and looked at him. I nodded. His fingers pressed gently against my back. He pulled me in closer, then closer still. I put my mouth to his ear. It was barely a whisper. I told you that I'm a murderer.
Florian. Her hips were in my hands. Her lips were on my ear. And then the word came out of her mouth. Murderer. I moved my head back and laughed. That's supposed to be my good ear, but it sounded like you said murderer. She said nothing, just stared at me, her eyes pooling with tears. What? She wasn't joking? She began slowly, taking a breath. Killed my cousin. I felt my eyes widen. She nodded. Tears dropped onto her cheeks.
My cousin Lena, she stammered. She was my best friend. When we fled from Lithuania, my father repeatedly told me not to leave anything or speak to anyone. But I couldn't leave without saying goodbye to Lena.
Tears streamed down Joanna's cheeks. Her breathing fluttered. It pained me to see her crying.
I wrote her a letter, explaining that we were on Stalin's list because my father had joined an anti-Soviet group. I gave the letter to our cook and asked her to mail it. I never should have put those things in writing. After we fled, the NKVD ransacked our house. My father's secret contact wrote to us and said the NKVD had my letter.
The cook gave your letter to the NKVD?
Yes, she whispered. My mother said she was probably trying to protect herself. When the Soviets came looking for us, we were gone. But based on my letter, they located Lena's family and took them instead. My father's contact corresponded with Lena's neighbor. She said they were arrested and deported to Siberia.
She tried to wipe her tears.
2 years ago, our neighbor sent a letter with a coded message, saying that my uncle was tortured and died in a gulag.
I pulled her into me. The pieces slid into place. Joanna felt responsible for her cousin being sent to Siberia.
When was that? I whispered. 4 years ago. June of 41, she cried.
From what I'd heard, Stalin's torture in Siberian gulags was brutal. Her cousin was probably dead. I wanted to say something to comfort her, but I wasn't good at this kind of thing. Maybe she got away somehow. Maybe she's still alive. Joanna brightened.
Do you think so?
She asked. She dabbed her eyes.
I feel so guilty. My freedom cost her family their lives. The drawing you found in my suitcase, it was from Lena. She was so talented and was just about to start art school.
Stop talking about her in past tense. She could be back in Lithuania soon. The positivity seemed to comfort her. We stood in silence. Her honesty and guilt, they made me like her even more. I tried to wipe her tears. She resumed my haircut.
So what are you going to do when we arrive in Kiel? She asked.
Kiss you, I wanted to say.
Let's see. First, try not to get arrested. Second, try to find my sister and protect her until the war ends.
What about you?
Try to communicate with my mother to find out about my family.
She finished cutting and brushed the hair off my shoulders.
There you are, Prussian. I think it looks nice. You could use a shave, though.
My hands were still on her hips. I stared at the amber pendant around her neck. Call me Florian, not Prussian, okay? I pulled her close. And I wasn't delirious, I whispered. I do think you're pretty. Take a break and meet me later, I told her. Let's meet here at 9:30. She seemed to think about it, then smiled and nodded. She moved toward the door.
I wasn't going to tell you because I was mad, but that blonde soldier came by before we sailed. He received a message from Koch, she said.
My head snapped up.
Yes, it said, have Beck contact me directly. Tell DRL dead. Keys needed. Urgent.
She reached out and touched my cheek. See you at 9:30. Joanna slipped out the small door. A root twisted in my stomach. Dr. Langa was dead. Who had gotten to him? I would be next.
Amelia. Joanna returned, smiling. Had she left to see the night? When birds pair, their plumage becomes more vibrant. I noticed that with the night and Joanna. Their feathers had changed since we arrived in the port. Something was happening between them. The deep swaying of the ship increased. The weather must be getting worse out there, Joanna commented, looking toward the ceiling. We're lucky to be inside. Cheerful melodies piped through the ship's speakers. The music was suddenly interrupted by an anniversary radio broadcast from Adolf Hitler. Exactly 12 years ago to this day, January 30th, he was appointed Chancellor of Germany. It was hard for me to understand Hitler's German as he yelled through the speakers. I caught one sentence, and it gave me shivers. When was the helpless goose ever not eaten by the fox?
Alfred. I collapsed among the refugees on the floor of the music room. My throat burned from the non-stop retching of phantoms in my stomach. A little girl played with a floppy stuffed bear near my feet. She stopped and stared at me for a long while. Stupid girl. It isn't polite to stare. Especially at someone in my condition, I informed her. She giggled, bent her bear over at the waist, and pretended it was vomiting. Oh, isn't that funny? I reached out and clawed a button eye from the bear's face.
Florian. I made my way down to A deck to check on the wandering boy. He slept, his head in the shoe poet's lap.
You've cut your hair. You look almost respectable.
The old man laughed.
Sit a while. Rest. The ship is doing the traveling for us.
Yes, at least we don't have to walk, I said.
Ah, but remember, the poet Emerson said that when we have worn out our shoes, the strength of the journey has passed into our body.
He nodded and winked.
Wisdom pays the largest debt to his shoemaker.
We sat in silence. I admired this kind man. Why couldn't I have apprenticed with someone like him instead of Dr. Langa? If I had listened to my father, how different would things be? I gestured to the boy. He's lucky to have you.
No, I am the lucky one, said the shoe poet. The boy keeps me kicking.
He looked at me, and his face softened. He extended his hand.
I'm Heinz, he said.
I shook his hand. Florian. He held my hand for an extra beat, staring at me.
The children and young people, you are the unlucky ones. This war has murdered many futures. Are your parents still alive?
He asked. I shook my head.
I thought so, he said, patting my knee.
You are a wandering boy, too.
Will you give the little one to the Red Cross in Kiel? I asked.
I don't think I could bear it, said the shoemaker. I quite like being Opie. I've got the address in Berlin that was pinned to his coat. I'll take him there myself and see what comes of it.
He sighed.
But who knows how long Berlin will hold? Do you have other family?
He asked. A sister, Annie. I haven't seen her in 3 years. I don't know if I'd recognize her.
You'll recognize her. Your feet will steer you in her direction.
The old man leaned back and hummed the melody of Lily Marlene. It made me think of Joanna. Are you married, Heinz? I asked.
I spent 55 years with the love of my life. I lost her last July.
He gestured to the boy.
Just when you think this war has taken everything you loved, you meet someone and realize that somehow you still have more to give.
I know what you mean, I said, looking at my watch.
I know you do.
He smiled.
And she's worth it, too.
Ioana. 9:15 p.m. 15 minutes. Then I would see Florian. I smiled, remembering Ava's comment that he wasn't too young for me. I hoped Ava was comfortable on the Hansa. Bang! A massive jolt. My head hit the wall. Lights flickered. Amelia was on the floor. What was happening? Bang! Total blackness. Women screamed. Bang! Alarm bells shrilled. The entire maternity ward suddenly tilted toward the front of the ship. Dim emergency lights began to glow.
Amelia. Bang! My body was thrown from the cot. I hit the floor. Bang! Pitch black. I crawled. I couldn't see the baby. I yelled for Ioana. Bang! Screaming. Glass breaking. Alarms ringing.
Alfred. We were 25 nautical miles offshore. Bang! Something slammed into the port side of the ship. What was that? Bang! Another explosion. Darkness. I could not breathe. Bang! Panicked screams filled my head. My body shifted. The ship was listing. The nose was going under.
Florian.
Bang! Our bodies slammed into each other. The old man grabbed my arm.
Did we hit a mine?
He whispered.
Bang!
The little boy stirred.
Opie?
Yes, yes, I'm right here. The old man quickly tightened the straps on the boy's life vest.
Bang!
And then I knew. Torpedoes.
Ioana. I stood, not knowing what to do. Where were Dr. Vent and Dr. Richter? I helped a screaming pregnant woman off the floor. She gripped my arm in terror.
Please, help me,
she pleaded. Amelia grabbed Helinka. She wrapped her in a pillowcase and then quickly spiraled a sheet around her. She looked at me and shouted, pointing up with her finger. The ship's tilt increased. Everything in the room slid. The pregnant woman's nails pierced my skin. Amelia sprang into action. She put on her coat and pink hat, grabbed a life vest from the corner and tied it on. She held the swaddled baby in one arm and threw life vests from the corner to everyone. I grabbed a vest with my free arm and put it around the pregnant woman. "Let's all stay calm," I said. We'll wait for Dr. Vent or one of the captains to advise us. I'm sure they'll make an announcement.
No!
Amelia yelled, gesturing frantically.
Coat! It's cold! Up! Now!
Amelia was saying we had to go up top into the cold. Amelia was saying the ship was sinking.
Amelia. The image of the burning, sinking wreath flashed before my eyes. Noise increased from the corridor. I called out to the women. Hurry! Take your coats! Wrap up! The cold will kill you! Was anyone listening? Did they understand me? Didn't they realize that we had to get out of the metal container? The boat carried more people than the population of some cities. I thought of the ship's many levels. Thousands of passengers would surge toward the top. The stairways would be jammed. No one was moving fast enough. I ran around the area, swatting at them like pigeons. Ioana wanted to wait for instructions. No. We had to move. Now. I looked down at the tiny baby. Her eyes were open wide, staring into mine. She began to cry.
Alfred. Emergency lights blinked on. A sailor ran through the heaps of refugees, instructing everyone to put on life vests. What happened? I yelled to him. Torpedoes! A Russian sub! We had been torpedoed by a Russian submarine? The ship's list increased dramatically. Things began sliding down the angled floor. Suddenly, the grand piano in the music room rolled fast, crushing the little girl with the bear in its path before crashing into the wall and releasing a discordant cry. Passengers shrieked and wailed, trying to help the girl who now resembled smashed fruit. Burning bile rose in my throat. A woman sitting nearby held her infant out to me and screamed, "Help us! What do we do?" She reached for me. I picked up the life vest near the feet of the mangled girl. I slipped it over my head. "You should probably leave," I told the woman. I pushed my way to the stairs.
Florian. The corridor was jammed with passengers.
"Torpedoes! The submarine is under the ship!"
someone yelled. Panic flared into a desperate rush of yelling and pushing. I slung my pack onto my back. I grabbed the little boy and picked him up.
"Do we have to leave the boat?"
asked the boy. "Yes. Hang on to my middle. Tight. Do not let go."
"Opie!"
yelled the boy.
"Yes, yes, Opie's here," said the shoe poet. "I'm here."
"Do you have our coins?"
called the boy.
"Yes, I have the coins," he replied.
My mind raced through the layout of the ship. We were on A deck, front dining hall. We had to climb up two decks to Ioana, then up to the sun deck. I thought of the four levels below us. The boat tilted farther. Frantic screams splintered through the dark passageway. We would soon be trapped.
"Hurry!" shouted the old man. "Wait, Florian! Where's your life vest?"
he asked me. Alarm bells continued to shriek.
"Walk in front of me!" I yelled to the shoemaker. "I can lift you if I need to."
The boy on my front, my pack on my back, we pushed our way through the sea of people toward the stairs. The boy clung to my neck, his legs around my stomach, feet locked at the ankles under my pack. The width of the crowd knocked the fire extinguisher from the wall in the stairwell. It fell and exploded, sending foam everywhere. People began to slip and fall. Others simply scrambled over them. I felt the crunch of bodies underfoot in the dark, and the little boy's panting breaths in my hair. I pushed Poet up in front of me. People grabbed and clawed at my back. I leaned forward, trying to stay upright. And then I felt a pull on my shoulder. It was the strap on my pack. It snapped.
Ioana. Announcements crackled through the speaker system. "Remain calm. Proceed in an orderly manner to the top deck." Dr. Vent burst into the maternity ward. "Don't listen to the announcements. Get the women on deck and into lifeboats. Quickly." "What should we take?" I asked, moving toward my suitcase. "Nothing," he said. "Just take your life vest. Hurry." I corralled the women out of the ward and directed them to the stairwell. The hallway was already flooded. Where was Amelia? Icy water seeped through my boots.
"Erica!"
a desperate man shrieked.
"Erica! Where are you?"
The boat was nose first and tilting left to port side. The stairs slanted at an awkward angle, making them even more difficult to climb. The lifeless body of a child lay trampled near the stairs. I tried to stop and pick him up, but the surge of the crowd knocked me forward. Thousands of piercing screams filled the stairwell.
We're going to drown!
A woman cried. A gunshot echoed somewhere below. Further panic swelled through the mass of people on the stairs. I was moving, but not sure I was even walking. People clambered over one another as they climbed. The weaker ones fell backward and were sucked underfoot, unable to pull themselves up. The stairway became choked. The ship tilted deeper into the water. The woman was right. We were all going to drown.
Alfred. I ran downhill along the tilting corridor, freezing water up to my knees. A small boy swam by me. All of the passengers seemed to be going the other way. But I knew something they didn't. There were interior ladders inside the ventilation ducts. I pushed past people, continuing on my way.
Sailor, please!
Someone called out behind me. I reached the end of the corridor. Another sailor appeared. He grabbed me by the shirt.
Hurry! We have to get everyone out of the cabins and up on deck!
He said.
How severe is it?
I asked.
3 torpedoes. E-deck, the engine room, and the forward compartments are destroyed.
E-deck. The swimming pool. The naval auxiliary girls were on E-deck. The sailors' bunks were in the forward compartments. The sound of joists snapping and rivets popping echoed through the stairwell.
She's going down, said the sailor. Grab a coat if you can find one.
I followed him onto the upper promenade deck, taking a coat from a woman who was struggling with her life vest. The sailor began smashing and breaking open cabin doors that had jammed. He shuttled people toward the stairs.
Come on!
He shouted to me.
Get these people out!
Yes, everyone, hurry! I said to myself. I opened a door. A woman and child lay bloody on the floor. In the center of the cabin, a naval officer stood with a gun to his head. I watched. Somehow fascinated. Would he do it? He turned and pointed the gun at me. I ran back to the ventilation ducts. I am a thinker. I am thinking. Torpedo strike, approximately 9:15 p.m. Ship's capacity, 1,463. Passengers on board, 10,573. Lifeboats, 22. But then I remembered. 10 of the lifeboats were missing.
Amelia. I made it to the top deck. Snow whipped, stinging my face. I clutched the baby. The wind lashed, trying to pull us over. The nose of the Gustloff was already beneath the water, and the ship was rolling onto its left side. The icy deck glimmered, slick. I crouched down and crawled with Helinka, speaking to her in Polish. Nie płacz. Don't cry. The night was dark. The sea churned, boiling and angry. Huge waves crashed against the ship. A sailor fired a flare. It soared high, a red shooting star illuminating an endless snow-filled sky. Frantic passengers tried to run as soon as they emerged from the stairs. I watched as they slipped and skidded across the icy deck, screaming and plunging into the water like human raindrops. People cried. They fought. Sailors yelled. A grown woman kicked a teenager out of the way, ignoring her pleas for help. I stopped and crouched farther down with Helinka, holding her soft, warm body close to mine. I sang All the Little Duckies and hooked one arm around a metal railing on the deck. The ship submerged deeper into the sea. Sailors struggled with the frozen winches that held the lifeboats on the left side. The lifeboats on the right side were unusable, suspended high out of the water. But I wasn't looking for a lifeboat. I was looking for the night.
Florian. We made it to the top deck.
Hang on to me!
I yelled to the old man.
Wait! It's slippery! Our shoes will slide!
Shouted the shoemaker.
We must crawl!
Hordes of people emerged onto the icy deck. A man began to run. His feet slipped out beneath him. His body sailed through the air, his back snapping in two against the ship's rail, before bouncing into the sea. I saw a lifeboat, only half full, lowered into the water. It had two sailors in it. The winds and sea spray whipped against our faces, making it hard to see or even move. People scrambled to the next boat, fighting and jumping to get in. Someone cut the back rope, but the front rope didn't release. The boat overturned and dangled, spilling all of the people into the deep black to drown. Screams of death filled my good ear. The other half of my head felt detached, muted.
"Where is your life vest?"
yelled the shoemaker to me, as he clutched the wandering boy. I had been hiding. I hadn't been issued a vest. Some passengers dove off the ship, rather than wait for a boat. Countless bodies bobbed in life vests in the water.
"Look for our girls," said the shoemaker. "Where are the girls?"
Joanna. I emerged up top into the freezing wind and snow. I had lost sight of Amelia on the stairs. I yelled for her and looked for her pink hat. Dr. Vent and Dr. Richter were already on deck, loading the wounded into a boat. I directed the remaining pregnant women to them. They gave me a life vest. I put my arms through it and tied the strings in the front. "Please," a girl cried to me. "My cousin is down on the lower deck. Please help me go find her." Her cousin. Thousands were on the lower decks. Thousands were trapped. The ship suddenly groaned and shifted into a deeper tilt. "Get in a boat, now!" I yelled to the girl. I directed her toward a lifeboat. I grabbed a railing near the staircase. A loud crash thundered from behind. The enormous anti-aircraft weaponry slid across the deck, broke through the rail, and smashed onto a lifeboat that had just been lowered. The weapons, the boat, and all of the passengers sank quickly beneath the surface. A scream erupted from within me.
Alfred. I had made it up top. Everyone was screaming. Screaming was not thinking. Passengers struggled toward the rail and the lifeboats. I watched them cry, yell, and beg for help. Beg for life. The scene played as if to music. People looked to me, eyes panting and desperate. Their hands reached for me in choreographed synchronization. Save me. Save me. Save me. We crawled on the slippery deck. An injured woman grabbed my ankle. "Please, help me!" she shrieked. The salt of her tears had smudged her eye makeup. I nodded. Yes, she would need help to fix her ruined face. Panic required me to take action. I could not. The chaos disrupted my ability to focus, pulling me instead from reaction to observation. My arm began moving, turning the invisible crank of death's music box. Somewhere inside, I didn't want the melody to end. I saw Captain Peterson lowered with passengers in a boat. My intelligence then called to me. If our captain was leaving, surely I should depart as well. A lifeboat. Yes, I would get in a lifeboat. The blisters on my hands popped and bled. I wiped them off on the wool coat I had taken from the passenger. I shoved through the thick crowd to the rail. And then I saw the recruit, the old man, and the little boy. The recruit was screaming. Veins bulged in his neck. His mouth contorted as he summoned all of his strength to roar one single word. Joanna!
Florian. The few remaining boats were filling fast. My pack swung from my shoulder on the single strap, causing me to slip and lose balance. I saw the pink hat through the crowd. And then I saw Joanna. The Polish girl was crawling behind with the baby. I moved through the throngs of people toward them. The sailor, Alfred, crept slowly in my direction.
"Joanna! Emilia! Hurry! Women and children first!
I yelled. Joanna turned, saw the Polish girl, and grabbed her.
Hurry!
I repeated to Joanna. Get in the boat! I'll help her in with the baby!
Take the little one!
Shouted Poet, frantically pushing the wandering boy through the crowd.
Please take him!
He pleaded.
Opie!
The boy screamed, fighting to get back to the shoemaker. A sailor helped Joanna down a rope ladder into the lifeboat. She reached up for the baby. The Polish girl refused. She motioned for me to get into the swaying boat. People pushed past. The boat began to fill.
Go! Get into the boat!
I yelled.
She only trusts you!
Shouted Joanna.
She wants you to bring the baby down! Damn it!
I handed Alfred my pack.
Hold this!
The shoe poet tossed a life vest over my head. I took the baby from the Polish girl and climbed down into the boat.
There's too many people!
Someone screamed.
We're going to capsize!
Only one more,
a sailor said.
Wait, no!
I yelled.
We have more people!
One more,
the sailor repeated.
Amelia, hurry!
Screamed Joanna. Amelia stared at us from above, then quickly pushed the wandering boy into the boat on top of us. The ropes snapped, and our boat dropped down into the water. Amelia was still on deck. I was holding her baby. Alfred was still on deck. He was holding my pack.
Joanna. Our boat dropped down into the black water. I screamed for Amelia. Florian screamed for his pack. Huge waves battered and tossed us. A woman vomited in her lap. A deep rumbling sounded from the ship as it slid farther beneath the water. The wandering boy stood up in our lifeboat, his tiny arms stretched up toward the ship.
Opie!
He wailed.
Opie!
A tuft of white hair appeared. I'm coming, Klaus, echoed from above. The shoe poet leapt feet first off the ship, plummeting toward the sea.
Poet!
I screamed. He plunged into the water nearby. Florian handed me the baby and jumped up to dive in after him. A wave threw our boat and Florian stumbled, slamming onto the pin holding the oar. The wandering boy grabbed his coat. The boat pitched and hurled.
Row away! Someone yelled. When the ship goes under, it will suck us down with it.
Wait,
said the wandering boy, frantically searching the water.
Wait for my Opie.
Heinz!
Florian called into the darkness, his voice breaking with emotion.
Heinz, are you there?
But the shoe poet did not reappear. Florian grabbed my arm.
The sack of coins! The old man tied the bag to his belt. He gave me his life vest.
Opie!
Sobbed the wandering boy.
No, please. Opie.
Poet. Our blessed shoe poet. Our Opie. Our one light in the darkness. He was gone.
Alfred. The lifeboat was in the water. I was not in it. No operable boats remained. Some people had jumped down after the lifeboats. I was not a good jumper. I was afraid to jump. Shouting. Crying. Gunshots. The ship slid deeper into the sea. And then someone was pulling, yanking at me. The young Latvian woman who gave birth was screaming in my face and dragging me. The ship's list increased, and so did my terror. I stumbled behind the girl, my back feeling so heavy. And then we passed two rafts, stuck together with ice. She began kicking at them frantically, to dislodge them from the deck. One of the rafts came loose. The girl pulled me down onto it. And then we began to slide.
Amelia. The raft was sheet steel, with large buoyancy floats on each end. planks of wood stretched across the tanks with netting in between. The ship tilted, and our raft began to skid. Like a winter sled racing down an icy hill, we skated across the deck. Metal scraping. People screaming. I grasped tightly to the netting. Our raft launched out into the sea. Items tumbled into the water behind us with a splash. Luggage. Empty rafts. Empty bodies. A crowded lifeboat floated nearby. Drowning people in the water clung to the edges of the boat, desperately trying to pull themselves in. "Please," begged a teenage boy. "I'm so cold. Please let me in." He gripped the side of the lifeboat, struggling to pull himself up. "It's too crowded. It will capsize," argued the people in the boat. "Could you please warm my hands then? Please help me." They did not warm his hands. They beat at the teenager's fingers until he released his grip and slipped beneath the surface with a few small bubbles. "Come!" I yelled to the people in the water. "We have room on the raft!" And then, an enormous wave lifted the raft and pulled us away from the sinking ship. How foolish to believe we are more powerful than the sea or the sky. I watched from the raft as the beautiful deep began to swallow the massive boat of steel. In one large gulp.
Ioana. The baby. The wandering boy. What was I to do?
Florian. The Polish girl. My pack. Where were they?
Amelia. The knight. He had the baby. I knew he'd be a savior.
Alfred. Bodies were strewn like human confetti. Would I still get my medal?
Florian. The tail of the ship was all that remained sticking out of the water. People dangled from the railings, their legs swinging wildly. The glass-enclosed sun deck at the back of the ship was packed with hundreds of trapped passengers. They banged their desperate fists against the glass. The water inside rose higher and higher. A brave sailor, balancing on the stern, hacked at the glass with an axe, trying to free the trapped people. The glass would not break. He swung harder, then lost his balance and fell into the sea. We watched in horror as the people behind the glass began to drown. A lifeboat floated near the back of the Gustloff. In it sat a captain and several sailors. Thousands of lifeless bodies floated around us. I searched for Heinz and the sailor with my pack. A young girl kicked and shrieked in the water next to our lifeboat. I removed my life vest and threw it to her. "Grab my hand," I told her.
"No!"
yelled a woman in our boat.
"She'll turn us over!"
I stood and leaned over the side. Our lifeboat tipped toward the water. Everyone screamed. I reached down and grabbed the girl by her hair. She gripped my arm, and I pulled her into the boat. She fell, soaked and exhausted, at our feet. A woman in a fur coat yelled at me.
"You had no right! You're endangering everyone!"
"Shut up!" I roared. My body shook with anger.
"Do you hear me? Shut up!"
Everyone fell quiet. The wandering boy hid his crying face in the crook of his arm. Ioana reached up to me. I slumped down beside her and dropped my head into my hands. Fate is a hunter. Its barrel pressed against my forehead.
Ioana. The dark air was full of screams. Snow and sleet blew horizontally, battering our faces. A lifeboat near ours was sandwiched full of crying women and children. Florian saw them and stood up. They need someone to row their boat.
My free hand grabbed at his back. Stay, I begged him. Please, Florian, stay with me.
I'll go.
The husband of the woman in the fur coat stood up. The woman yelled and berated her husband as he bravely jumped from our boat into the other. Floating in the sea of black, we were forced to witness the massive and grotesque deaths of thousands of people. I clutched the baby tight and closed my eyes, but the scenes continued to play in my mind. The severely angled deck, a woman throwing her baby down to a sailor. He reached. He missed. The child hit the steel raft and then rolled off into the sea. Thousands of desperate people jumping, kicking, gulping, seawater filling mouths and nostrils, collapsing lungs, high waves, angry sea, snow and wind. The injured soldier who had begged for a kiss now floated dead near our lifeboat, his head strangled in the netting of a raft. So many people needed my help, and now I could do nothing. The frigid temperature of the water would induce immediate and lethal stress on their hearts. They would die of hypothermia. Instead of helping, I was forced to watch the panorama of catastrophe unroll before my eyes. Guilt is a hunter. I was its hostage.
Amelia. A white cap tossed us beyond a cluster of rafts, most of them empty. Less than an hour had passed since the ship was torpedoed. Thousands of dead bodies, eyes wide, floated frozen in life vests. In the darkness, closer to the sinking ship, I thought I could make out the silhouette of lifeboats. We were much farther from the ship than the others. The sailor was sick into the water. I pulled the pack from his arm. He thanked me and leaned farther over the edge of the raft. I had the knight's pack. The knight had the baby. The knight would want his pack. I wanted my baby. Pain ripped through my chest. I wanted her. I wanted my baby. A deep popping came from the ship. Its bones were snapping, breaking from the contortion pressure. The rounded stern sloped vertically toward the sky. People dangled from the railings, screaming. Others plummeted backward to their death. An explosion detonated from within the boat under the water. Suddenly, the entire ship lit up. A blaze of glittering lights brightly illuminated the water and the grotesque scene. I stared at the massive, twinkling ship. A groan, like a deep yawn, sent echoes across the waves into my face. And then, the lights vanished. The boat disappeared into the black. The huge steel city, and thousands trapped inside, was sinking to the bottom of the sea. A momentary quiet followed, leaving nothing but the sound of the wind and waves. We bobbed up and back, waves lapping and curling, the sound of crying filtering through the dark. Next to me, in the water, a young woman floated silently in a life vest. Her skirt rose up in a perfect circle around her. She turned in slow pirouette, dead arms outstretched. Snow dusting her dark hair like powdered sugar. A set of false teeth drifted by on a piece of wood and faded into the darkness. The lifeboats were too far away to yell. I didn't have an oar. I scanned the water for something to row with. Bobbing all around us were tiny children. The weight of their heads, the heaviest part of their bodies, had flipped them over in their life vests. With each wave, small corpses knocked against my raft. I was surrounded by hundreds of drowned children, heads in the water, their little feet in the air. All the little duckies with their heads in the water, heads in